Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, supported by EMD Serrano, we had the pleasure of speaking with Chandler Park, MD, about the first-line treatment of patients with bladder cancer. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Park discussed the core regimens in the current frontline bladder cancer treatment paradigm, ways that this paradigm is expected to evolve in the coming months and years, and how the choice of frontline therapy influences treatment decision-making regarding subsequent lines of therapy. Dr. Park, speaking about your recommendations for bladder cancer first-line treatment best practices, just what are some of the standard first-line treatment options that you typically use for patients with bladder cancer?
Yes, we're very fortunate here for oncologists that treat bladder cancer. Just to kind of give a historical background, about 20 years ago, the life expectancy for somebody with metastatic bladder cancer was about 9 to 12 months. And on the updated, ASCO GU update on EV-302, that number has gone up to 34 months. And so our patients are living longer, and also the treatments have improved. So here in 2025 here, there's three level one treatment options for patients with metastatic bladder cancer. One is enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab based on the EV-302 study. And so the effectiveness of this treatment is when the patients are treated, you have up to 70% response rate, but you also have that overall survival that was updated at ASCO GU up to 34 months. So that's a very effective treatment. In the past, we used to look at cisplatin or carboplatin ineligibility. But this treatment regimen of enfortumab vedotin with pembrolizumab can be used for cisplatin or carboplatin. So that seems to be my default right now, which I give to maybe 70 to 75% of my patients. What are the other two treatment options? The second one is cisplatin gemcitabine with nivolumab. And this is also a standard of care treatment. And this is based on the phase 3 CheckMate 901 study for patients that are cisplatin eligible. And so patients receive all three treatments up front. And, the hazard ratio for this with overall survival is close to 21.7 months versus 18.9. And so the patients with a response rate around 57.6%. So this is also a great treatment regimen. The third one that is very, that we're very familiar with, and that is the Javelin Bladder 100. And that is either cisplatin gemcitabine or carboplatin gemcitabine. And then after 4 to 6 cycles, as long as you have a great response or a partial response, you continue with maintenance avelumab. That's also a very effective treatment. So we have a lot of options here. So those are the three level one, category one treatment options that we have today. One is enfortumab pembrolizumab. The second is cisplatin gemcitabine with nivolumab, as long as they're cisplatin eligible. And then the third one, which is also a category one, which is cisplatin or carboplatin with gemcitabine for 4 to 6 cycles, and then you have that maintenance avelumab for immunotherapy.
What are some patient factors or disease characteristics that might make you choose a different treatment approach besides enfortumab vedotin, for instance, in certain patients?
So what are some of the things that I think about that's besides enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab? The one thing that I consider is, let's say for a patient that has severe diabetes mellitus, hemoglobin A1C greater than 8, or if you bring the patient into our treatment center and you're constantly checking the sugar level before the treatment and the glucose level is consistently over 300. And so if you look at the EV-302, you have to make sure that the sugar level is a control, because I've had patients in the EV-301 study, and we were one of the leading enrollers for that study, and we actually had to admit patients for diabetic ketoacidosis. So to your point, it's very important to select the right patients for each treatment. So let's say if I decide that we can't give enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab, what do I recommend? Then it boils down to cisplatin gemcitabine with nivolumab versus the Javelin Bladder 100 treatment. And so then the question is, are they cisplatin eligible? And so cisplatin eligible means, you have to have a creatinine clearance above 60, at least a grade 1 in terms of sensory neural. And you have to also be thinking about peripheral neuropathy. If they have any peripheral neuropathy, I might not think about cisplatin. and also New York Heart Association class 3, if they're symptomatic with heart failure, then you might not want to give them that treatment. And so then I start thinking about, if I want to do the chemotherapy, you know, we got the Javelin Bladder 100 paradigm where you do cisplatin or carboplatin with gemcitabine and maintenance avelumab. And so these are the patients, you know, sometimes the patients are a little bit on the older side. They may not receive enfortumab vedotin because of the, you know, maybe the peripheral neuropathy. Same thing with the cisplatin. Then I would give the carboplatin gemcitabine with the maintenance avelumab. The overall survival has gone up in here to the 29 months. So this is a very effective treatment. The other things that I think about in terms of disease features is if they have any kind of elevated in liver enzymes or if they have any kind of cirrhosis, I would kind of shy away from the enfortumab vedotin and lean more towards maybe the CheckMate 901 regimen and also the Javelin Bladder 100. The other thing I've noticed is a lot of our patients are a little bit weaker. And so sometimes I think if I give cisplatin, gemcitabine, nivolumab up front, that might have more side effects than breaking that up into two parts, which is do the chemotherapy first, whether it be gemcitabine with cisplatin or carboplatin with gemcitabine. And if you get a response, then you get that maintenance avelumab. So I've noticed in my practice that the patients you have to give chemotherapy, by breaking it up into two parts, you tend to have less side effects. One of the subgroup evaluations in the CheckMate 901 is the lymph node only metastatic urothelial cancers. I think on the one hand, the lymph node only tend to be a better prognostic feature, but that data looks very strong for cisplatin, gemcitabine, and nivolumab. And also in terms of the lymph node only metastatic disease for carboplatin, gemcitabine, cisplatin, gemcitabine with avelumab. So I look at the metastatic disease. Is it in the lung? Is it in the liver? Is it lymph node only? That's not saying that the enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab does not work on the lymph node only. They do work as well. But enfortumab vedotin is such a strong medication post-platinum, post-immunotherapy, that would give an opportunity for some of the oncologists to use enfortumab vedotin post-cisplatin, gemcitabine, post-immunotherapy. So I use that as a medication that I think every patient with metastatic bladder cancer should receive enfortumab vedotin as long as they qualify. But you can also use that in second line after cisplatin or carboplatin with immunotherapy with gemcitabine. So that's something I think about.
Can you share a specific clinical scenario from your practice where you decided to use avelumab in a patient with urothelial cancer?
Whenever we think about patients in their 70s or 80s, and we always hear about the word chemo, and the patients hear about the word chemo. And so I always kind of share with the patients that, you know, there's over 100 different cancers, 100 different chemos, and each chemo has different side effects. And so sometimes when they're a little bit older and maybe a little bit weaker in terms of performance status, maybe an ECOG 2, maybe a borderline ECOG 1, maybe they have peripheral neuropathy, grade 2 or higher, maybe if their platelet count is 60,000, because in the original data for EV-302, the platelet count has to be above 75,000. So you have to at least have at least a grade 1 and higher for EV pembro. But let's say you had a 75 to 80-year-old patient, a lot of comorbidities. I'm thinking about giving them treatment. I'm thinking about cisplatin or carboplatin, more likely carboplatin because they're a little bit weaker in terms of performance status. Carboplatin, gemcitabine, you get that response, and then you do the maintenance avelumab. And so I would say to the community oncologist, if you have that patient in front of you that you know has comorbidities, including, you know, liver disease, they may not be cisplatin eligible, that would be a good patient there for carboplatin, gemcitabine with maintenance avelumab. And so it is a category 1, level 1 treatment. So that's something I kind of remind everybody.
Well, then just, you know, overall, what would you say is sort of the importance of using the most optimal treatment up front in each patient with bladder cancer?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I know for me, if I have a younger patient, you want to get the best treatment up front. And that would be for enfortumab vedotin with pembrolizumab, with the highest response rate and the highest overall survival. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our patients have comorbidities. And so this is where the oncologists, we kind of have to use our you know, thinking hat on and think about what are the toxicities they have. And so it's very important to get the best treatment up front, but we also want to be mindful because if they have comorbidities, like if somebody has a very tough peripheral neuropathy because they have underlying diabetes mellitus, you might have that high response rate, but at what price? You might have somebody with severe grade 3, grade 4 peripheral neuropathy. And so I would say it's very important, but also keep in mind, you have to think about the comorbidities. And so this is where the art of medicine comes into play. I would say all things being equal, you want the best treatment up front, but if they have comorbidities such as diabetes mellitus, underlying liver disease, cisplatin ineligibility, that's when you start thinking about one treatment over the other.
Is there anything else that you would like to add about recommended strategies for, you know, combination regimens or treatment sequencing in the frontline setting here?
Yes, I think it was very unfortunate. Gilead chose to withdraw Trodelvy, sacituzumab govitecan. It's a very effective treatment and based on the TROPiCS-04 study. And I had patients do really well. And I still have patients that are still on the medication. But since that was the company voluntarily withdrew that medication, that removes another effective treatment. This is controversial because if you look at that study, a lot of the patients had neutropenic fever in the first 3 months. And so that kind of hampered some of the overall survival there. But here in March 2025, because that medication is removed, then the question is, how do we sequence on various treatment options? So let's say if a patient is on enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab, and let's say they progress. Then I have to start thinking, okay, molecular markers. We have to check FGFR3 alterations. FGFR2 was actually removed on the updated FDA guidelines, so FGFR3. Then you start thinking about erdafitinib. That's a very effective treatment, close to 40% response rate. I would consider that post EB Pembro. But on the other hand, you could also argue to do chemotherapy there. Then you would have to do, you know, evaluate and use the Golsky criteria to see if they are cisplatin ineligible. I think most of those patients would be cisplatin ineligible because they progress on enfortumab vedotin. I think the peripheral neuropathy would put them into platinum ineligible. Then you would have to do carboplatin gemcitabine. And so then you would do carboplatin gemcitabine. And this is where we have like TDXD, pan tumor. You have to check for the IHC HER2 3+ IHC. If they have that HER2 3+ IHC, and I've had patients right now that have received this, you have to give them TDXD based on the FDA pan tumor approval. Now, on the other hand, let's say that you have patient that have enfortumab vedotin, progress on carbo-gem or cis-gem. Then the question is, can you give them immunotherapy such as avalumab? This is a data-free zone. I haven't personally, but Dr. Vadim Koshkin at UCSF, he's got some really interesting data on re-challenging with immunotherapy. And so this might be emerging. So that's something we have to kind of think about. Then you start thinking if they have good performance status, you know, the taxane arm in some of these studies in the TROPiCS-04, they actually did okay. So you would consider maybe a taxane there. Now, in terms of if they do the 901, okay, then the cisplatin gemcitabine with nivolumab, if they progress, you have to do enfortumab vedotin there. Let's say they have an FGFR3 alteration there. They've done studies where you do the enfortumab vedotin with the erdafitinib and then you randomize, very similar in terms of response rate. So you could do the FGFR3 erdafitinib before EV, but personally, I would do EV. And if they have an FGFR3, then I would do an erdafitinib. Now, lastly, then the question is, if they do the Javelin Bladder 100 paradigm and they do the carbo-gem and the maintenance avalumab, if they progress, I would still do the EV after that. Then I would consider if they have an FGFR3 alteration, then I would give erdafitinib. And then I would say, don't forget about checking the molecular studies for HER2 3+ IHC, because that's a pan tumor. And if you look for it, the patients respond really well to this treatment. I think there's going to be a lot more studies coming in the perioperative space. For instance, with the Niagara study that we kind of participated in, strong data there. When you give the chemotherapy and immunotherapy up front, and the patients end up with cystectomy and the continuous maintenance immunotherapy. That data is strong. I anticipate that'll be FDA approved here in the next 2 to 3 months, a knock on wood. And then I anticipate a lot of great data, maybe not necessarily for ASCO, but for ESMO this year. And it's going to have to do with a lot of these molecular studies, such as circulating tumor DNA. A lot of these patients have pathological complete response. Do we have another marker to see if the patients can be continued with observation? So there's going to be some studies maturing, such as the Invigor 11 that looks at the bladder studies, and also the modern study that looks at the ctDNA. So a lot of exciting stuff here. And the last thing that's going to be FDA approved likely later in the year, and that has to do with the TAR-200 device. So a lot of our patients that have received BCG after they received, you know, if they're diagnosed with bladder cancer, they receive BCG with a urologist, the BCG for some of these patients stopped working. And so there's this medication called the TAR-200 device. It looks like a long coffee straw. And inside the coffee straw, they put gemcitabine. And so they insert the straw inside the bladder, and it slowly releases gemcitabine at a very slow time release fashion. And at ESMO last year, this study called the Sunrise study showed about an 82% response rate, a durable response. So I anticipate when this goes to the FDA, but later this year, crossing our fingers for our patients, post-BCG, I think we're going to have a lot of patients that can qualify for this approval. And so then the question is, why is it important for patient care? And the reason is, if somebody has bladder cancer and it's localized, the last thing they want is to have their bladder removed. And so a lot of these treatments are moving earlier and earlier lines of treatment, so that way our patients can maintain their bladder.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, supported by EMD Serrano. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.